You're all I ever wanted. You're all I ever needed. Yeah. So tell me what to do now. Cause I want you back. Good morning, boys and girls. It is Thursday, August 3rd, 2017. Tonight, the Green Bay Packers will be back on the practice field after their off day on Wednesday. Beginning tonight at 6:15 Central Time, the Packers start a run of three consecutive night practices, one today, one tomorrow, and one Saturday. The Saturday practice is the annual family night held inside Lambeau Field, and it'll be a chance for a lot of these rookies, undrafted guys, to play in front of possibly the biggest crowd they've ever played for, and that would be 77,000, I think they said, would be the ticket allotment for Saturday night. 77,000 inside Lambeau Field, under the lights, screaming fans. It's a huge test annually for these guys to start to play in the elements and see who can handle things when the bright lights go on and the setting changes from just a regular practice field. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. I think it's televised on NBC here in Wisconsin, so for those of you who are in the state, you might have a chance to watch it Saturday night. And for those of you who do not, well, we'll have a podcast for you first thing Monday morning to recap everything that happened. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. I thank you very much for listening and sticking with us here through this new format in training camp. Daily podcasts every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Quick hitting shows about 15 to 20 minutes in length, catching you up on all the news, notes, nuggets, quotes, injuries, everything you need to know from the day before in your inbox, on your iPhone, on your cell phone, on your laptop by about 4:30 in the morning for those of you that are early risers. So be sure to subscribe on the iTunes Store or Stitcher or Audioboom, or just bookmark our two websites, jsonline.com and packersnews.com. Check those every Monday through Friday for a brand new episode of the Packers Podcast. Now, let's talk about the news of Wednesday. It was an off day for the Packers, like I said, but it was the very first time that we got to talk to assistant coaches during training camp. And this is always really, really interesting because it's the first time that you get a chance to discuss with these guys in detail the players that they work with every single day for hours and hours and hours. You know, of course, we get to talk to Mike McCarthy just about every day during training camp, but McCarthy can only do so much. Of course, he has his areas of focus with the offense. He's an offensive coach. He, of course, knows the quarterbacks really well, takes a lot of time to look at the young quarterbacks in addition to Aaron Rodgers. But as everybody knows, there's a bunch of other guys on the field, a bunch of other positions, and so it can be really fascinating to talk to some of these assistant coaches and see who's jumping out to them, what they're seeing, and all kinds of stuff from their practices, their classroom sessions, and really everything that goes along with these training camp days that are very, very long. They start early in the morning, sometimes as early as 6:30 for rookies doing their weightlifting, and they can go as late as 9 and 10 o'clock at night before some of these rookies head back to their hotel to get just a couple hours sleep before they do it all again. The way the Packers do this is they split it up week by week. So this week we got to talk to the defensive assistant coaches. Next week we'll get to talk to the offensive assistant coaches. And just about every week we get to talk to special teams coordinator Ron Zook, offensive coordinator Edgar Bennett, and defensive coordinator Dom Capers. So you get a little bit of a sliver of the other areas of the team in addition to whatever side of the ball we're focusing on that week. So like I said, yesterday was defensive coaches, and as the coaches were speaking to the media from their podium, it's a press conference setting. It used to be where the coaches would spread around in different parts of a room, and you would just go up to the guy and stand next to him and have a conversation. Sometimes there might be a couple reporters, or four or five, maybe just one-on-one, and the Packers did away with that starting last year, and now everything is press conference format. So we have to ask them questions while they're at the podium in front of all the other reporters, just the same as we would talk to Mike McCarthy in the morning. It's a frustrating format. It's not as productive of a format. And some of these assistant coaches don't have a lot of experience speaking up at the podium, so you can tell that there's a little bit of nerves, perhaps some anxiousness, and perhaps some uncomfortability with the setting, but that is what the Packers want to do, and so we deal with what we have. The first thing I jotted down came from special teams coordinator Ron Zook. He was, of course, asked about the punt return battle, which I've talked about before on this podcast, and that is essentially two wide receivers competing for the job. You have Trevor Davis, the fifth-round pick from a season ago, and you have Randall Cobb, the veteran. Both of these guys have returned punts in the past. Trevor Davis had a little bit of experience doing it last year before some mistakes cost him that opportunity, and I'll talk about that in a second. And Randall Cobb returned punts pretty extensively in his first 2 years in the league. He had one punt return touchdown as a rookie, one punt return touchdown as a sophomore, and during that rookie season, he also had one kick return touchdown. So this is a guy that ever since then, his usage in special teams has gone down because his usage on offense has gone up. And so to limit his potential for injuries, you take him off special teams and let him focus only on offense. But Randall Cobb has come out and been very, very vocal about wanting to return punts this year. He wants that job badly, and he said that he's asked the coaches to do it, something that he's actually done the past couple of seasons, and he's been frustrated not to get the job in recent years. So he's pushing really hard for that opportunity this year, and it's going to be pretty interesting to see how much of a leash the coaches are willing to give him, because the more snaps he takes on special teams, the greater the risk that he injures himself, and because he is significantly more important to the offense than Trevor Davis, you're talking about risking a larger component of your offense than if you have Trevor Davis back there. Now, let's talk about Davis. So, Davis was a rookie last season, as I mentioned. He had very few opportunities on offense, and he had an okay number of opportunities to return punts on special teams. But it was against Tennessee last year on the road. I believe it was week 10, maybe week 11. I can't quite remember. It was in November. And Davis had an opportunity to return a punt, and he muffed that kick, and it was recovered by Tennessee, and they went down and scored a touchdown in what ended up being a really embarrassing blowout loss for the Packers. In that game, he also dropped a pass, and it was just a very, very tough day for him, and he was essentially benched from that point forward. He hardly played at all the last 6 weeks of the season. There were some games where he wasn't even on the active roster, the 46-man active roster, and so this season is not only about growth, because you always hear Mike McCarthy talk about the jump from rookie to second season for any of these players, and that's obviously the case for Davis as well. But this is a chance for redemption for him, really. This is an opportunity for him to show that the mistakes that he made last season were flukes or nerve-related or just, you know, maybe him being a little bit of wide-eyed at the fact that he's in an NFL stadium, there's guys flying all around him, he's not the biggest guy, he's not the strongest guy, so, you know, there's players that are much bigger than him zooming around trying to take his head off on these punts. Maybe he's going to show that that's what it was, and this season perhaps he'll show greater ball security, perhaps he'll win that job. The reason I bring this up is because Ron Zook said that Trevor Davis actually mailed him tapes or sent him tapes in some form. I don't know if it was snail mail, DVDs, or emails, or maybe it was just cell phone clips, but he said that Davis sent him tapes of Davis's workouts returning punts. So all during the 5 week period between the end of minicamp and the start of training camp, picture Trevor Davis somewhere in California where he grew up, returning these punts, having somebody videotape him, and then somehow that videotape is being sent to Ron Zook so that Zook can look at it, critique it, and see that Trevor Davis is serious about this. And so I thought that was kind of unique, and Zook said that that's something he's never seen in any of the players that he's coached during his time in the NFL. No professional football player has spent his summer making tapes for Ron Zook to look at. So that gives you a little bit of a unique window into Trevor Davis and sort of his mental approach to this season and how much it means to him to try and shake off what was a forgettable and unproductive rookie season. The next thing on my list comes from the associate head coach and outside linebackers coach, Winston Moss. Now, of course, Clay Matthews and Nick Perry are going to be the story at outside linebacker all season. That's not going to change tomorrow. It's not going to change in September. It's definitely not going to change in November, December, and January as the Packers try and make a playoff push. When it comes to pass rush, the Packers will essentially go as far as those two guys go. And if they're healthy, you can probably count on them for pretty good to excellent production. If they're not healthy, you've got serious problems, and that's because of the lack of depth at outside linebacker. That's a topic I've talked about on this podcast before, but Winston Moss offered a little bit of a scouting report on the number three and number four guys in the pecking order, and they were pretty interesting. So let's start with Jayrone Elliott. Elliott is a guy that is tremendously athletic, has good speed, good size for the position, very quick twitch athlete, and it's a guy that when you look at him and you watch some of the things he's done in the past, you wonder to yourself, why is this guy not producing at a more consistent level? Why is he not able to find the level of consistency that lets him harness this athletic ability and be on the field on a consistent basis? And so the scouting report from Moss on Jayrone Elliott's first week of camp went something like this. He said that Elliott has showed up more in the run game than he has in the past, which, if you go back through the last couple years of his career, that's been the area of weakness. He's not stout enough against the run, and that's one reason why he can't be on the field that often. He's more of a pass rush specialist. So that's a good sign for Elliott. The flip side of that is Elliott has not looked very good in pass rush drills, and that's supposed to be his calling card, the thing that he can hang his hat on. And Moss basically said that he's still trying to figure out his pass rush moves, what works best for him. And so for a guy that has been in the league a couple of years, for a guy that has a tremendous opportunity in front of him to earn significant snaps at a position where the Packers are looking mostly for pass rush, mostly for sacks, mostly for impact plays, that's not necessarily what you want to hear. So the exhibition games are going to be crucial for Elliott to see if he can find and identify some sort of a pass rush identity and then carry that over from week to week as camp continues. Now let's flip over to Kyler Fackrell. Fackrell was the third round pick a year ago from Utah State, and he is a very different guy than any of the other outside linebackers we've mentioned so far. And that's really because his physical traits are quite different. He's very tall. He has very long arms. He's lean. He does not have a very muscular build. And so he wins almost exclusively on athleticism. He's quick. He's fast. He has a slippery element to him where even though he doesn't have a lot of strength, he seems to find a way to peel off some of these blocks or just kind of sneak by the arms of offensive tackles. It's kind of something where if you watch it, it doesn't really make sense. And when you look at him, it doesn't really make sense that he's able to find a little bit of success here and there like he did as a rookie last season. And so it's just kind of a credit to him that he has this, I don't want to call it a quirky style because I don't think that's fair to him. I would just say it's a little bit of a change up from what the typical outside linebacker looks like, and I think that throws off some offensive tackles at times. Now, Moss's scouting report on Fackrell was kind of unique in that it really didn't have anything to do with his attributes in terms of his pass rush or his run game or anything like that. It was more about demeanor, and Moss basically said that they're looking for this guy to be a little nastier, to show a little bit more aggression, to take the skills and the traits that he has and apply them with a little bit more nastiness to him, to find a way to, you know, get cranky, to be ornery, to sort of absorb that or harness or find or discover, whatever he has to do, locate that defensive mentality that you associate with guys like Mike Daniels or guys like Clay Matthews or guys like HaHa Clinton Dix that have a certain fire or a certain vigor to them, you know, a sort of do not come in my house or I'm going to beat you mentality in terms of their one-on-one matchups. And so Moss is really looking for Fackrell to try and find that, conjure it, locate it, do whatever he has to do to just play with a little bit more of an edge. And he thinks that that could bring out even more of his skill set than Fackrell's been able to show so far. And it hasn't been a great camp for Fackrell so far. But again, last year was not a great camp for Fackrell either. He looked terrible. He looked out of place. He didn't look like he could play at this level. And then come the regular season, he found ways to contribute, not on a significant level, but he found ways to give you something week in and week out in very small doses. And if he can grow those doses to something a little bit bigger this year, that would be a huge boost for the pass rush, because there's only so many snaps that Matthews and Perry can play before A, they get hurt, or B, their bodies are completely shot by January in terms of fatigue and wear and tear, you know, the small bruises, bumps, all the stuff that these guys get. And so they need Fackrell, Elliott, and when he comes back from his injury, Vince Beagle, to give them something to help these guys out. The next thing I wrote down was from safeties coach Darren Perry, and Darren Perry has a couple of young toys to play with back there in the secondary. You know, first and foremost, he has the second round pick Josh Jones from NC State, and that's a guy that I've talked about a number of times. There's been tons of stories written about him, tweets about him. This is a guy that has really jumped off the page, so to speak, in his first training camp here, both with his speed and his size, really. This is a guy that is essentially the same size as Joe Thomas, an inside linebacker. So he's about 220 pounds, maybe even closer to 225, but he is the fastest guy on the defense. He ran 4.41 at the combine, which is blazing fast for a guy of that speed. And so he gives you a totally different look in terms of stature and athletic ability than the Packers have with anybody else on defense. And when you pair him with a guy like Kentrell Bryce, who was a rookie last year, an undrafted rookie that made the team out of Louisiana Tech, you're talking about two guys that are vicious, vicious hitters. And that's not to say Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and Morgan Burnett can't bring the lumber, because they certainly can. But when you look at Jones and when you look at Bryce, it's almost like any video game you've ever played in which you have the option to use a heat-seeking missile. It's like any time these guys are in the general vicinity of the ball player, of the ball carrier, whether that's a running back, a receiver, a tight end, it doesn't matter. Whoever has the ball, anytime these guys are there, it's like they have to unleash some kind of fury on them. They just want to intimidate you. They want to make you uncomfortable. They want you to know that if you come over the middle and you're not looking, that you will pay a price. And the Packers don't have too many guys that are like that. They have guys that can hit, but that mentality is a little bit different. And you know, Darren Perry is an old school guy. He's not very old school in terms of his age. You know, he's not this 60 and 70 year old guy, you know, the way Dom Capers is certainly in the latter stages of his career. He's significantly younger than that. But he has an old school view of the game in that he really preaches, embraces, and frankly, he pretty much adores the physical side of the game. And so you could see yesterday when he was answering questions about Jones, about Bryce, about their physicality, it's almost like he couldn't stop himself from smiling in between his answers, because these are the types of players that are your throwback, vicious, take your head off kind of guys. And Perry just loves it. He loves coaching those kind of guys, and he thinks that they bring a significant mental element to the secondary when it comes to intimidation or, you know, basically inciting fear in some of the smaller receivers and things from other teams that have to come over the middle. So that's something to really watch in the exhibition games. If these guys can carry over the physicality from the first few days of pads into the games, and then, this is going to be the most important, can they find ways to be physical without gambling and getting burned? Because there's a lot of really, really physical safeties in this league, or linebackers, where you can use that aggression against them. They might bite hard on play action fakes. They might bite on double moves, because when it comes to receiving patterns, because they anticipate maybe a throw into the flat and they're thinking that they're going to deck this guy. And then all of a sudden, instead of a throw into the flat toward the sideline, it becomes an out and up. So the guy runs toward the sideline, and then right when you think the pass is going to be thrown, he turns upfield and takes off down the sideline. And those types of routes can really expose some of these big hitters. So you have to find a way to inflict the kind of damage you want to inflict while not necessarily gambling to the point where teams start to pick up on it and you can be exposed in various areas of the passing game. The other thing that was really interesting about the secondary came from cornerbacks coach Joe Witt Jr. And Witt basically talked a lot about how he tries to discern which of these young players can play and which of these young players can't play, which of these young players can be trusted, and which of these young players still have a lot to prove when it comes to earning the consistent playing time and trust from their coaches. And so he talked a lot about rookie Kevin King. He talked a lot about guys like Demarius Randall, Quentin Rollins, all these young players that he really has that are in their third year or below. And basically what he said he likes to do is rotate as many guys through the first team defense as possible. So in other words, when you have your Mike Daniels out there, when you have your Clay Matthews, your Nick Perry, your HaHa Clinton Dix, this first team starting defense, he likes to mix his corners in with those guys as much as he can. And the reason for it is pretty simple. Generally, the first team offense goes against the first team defense, and he wants all of these corners to get work against Aaron Rodgers because that is the ultimate test. It is the ultimate test in discipline. It is the ultimate test in technique. It is the ultimate test in body placement, physicality, not gambling, all these different things that cornerbacks need to be evaluated on. Aaron Rodgers can induce those things better than any other quarterback on the roster. And so that's really an interesting method, because I don't want to say throwing these guys to the wolves, because certainly, you know, there's a number of these guys that are able to play with the starters and capable of playing at that level. But essentially what he's saying is, I'm not going to ease you along in camp if you're in that group that is around the starting caliber level. I'm going to throw you out there. I'm going to have Aaron Rodgers throw the ball at you, and we're going to see how you do when your eyes get wide and, you know, you're a deer in headlights for a second there. Do you sink or do you swim? So if you're at practice at all over the next, you know, 2-3 weeks before the Packers really start to, you know, pare down their reps and really only focus on the starting guys with the starting guys, take a look at some of the young players that are out there against Rodgers and see how they do in terms of covering receivers, passing off routes. Maybe can they get a hand on balls? Are they being beat in certain areas? Is that, routes along the sideline? Is it crossing routes? Whatever the case may be, take a look at whether or not Aaron Rodgers can find some holes in the games of these young cornerbacks. The next thing I want to talk about came from offensive coordinator Edgar Bennett. And Bennett basically was asked, in a year when you draft 3 running backs, how are you able to discern one from the other when they're not necessarily getting a significant number of reps? Because don't forget, Ty Montgomery is being treated as the number one running back. So the 3 guys that they drafted, Jamal Williams in the 4th, Aaron Jones in the 5th, and Devontae Mays in the 7th, they're basically being asked to split a decently small portion of reps, you know? It's not like it's a tiny piece of cheesecake when you're on a diet, but they are splitting a portion of reps that is not necessarily indicative of their overall skill set. Because if a guy only gets 2 reps here, 1 rep there, 3 reps there, 2 reps here, it's difficult to get into a rhythm of the game. It's difficult to show your different attributes over the course of a drive. And so that was basically posed to Edgar Bennett, and he said, how do you figure this out? And he said, well, one of the big differentiators for these young running backs, of course, is pass protection. And I've talked about that on this podcast as well within the last few days. And so that's when he brought up Jamal Williams. Jamal Williams, the 4th-round pick from BYU, is the only one of the rookie running backs that I've seen that has taken reps with the starting offense. So he's had a chance, just like Ty Montgomery, to run behind the starting offensive line and really experience what it's like behind the big boys, behind the talented group. You know, you're talking about an all-pro in David Bakhtiari. You're talking about really solid players across the board, whether it's Lindsley, Bulaga, Jari Evans, and of course Lane Taylor, who, you know, I'm sure he'll be talked about in future podcasts because he's having a very good start to training camp. But when Jamal Williams runs behind this line, he looks very good. And I think he could be a nice complement to Ty Montgomery if he continues in the right direction. But that's not the reason I bring it up. The reason I bring it up is because Edgar Bennett said this is the guy that has separated himself in pass protection. And as I mentioned the other day, I think I mentioned it on this podcast, where Jamal Williams basically said that early in his career at BYU, he had no interest in pass protection. He didn't like it. It made him uncomfortable. He didn't feel like he knew exactly how to win in that area. And then as his career went on, he understood the techniques. He got better at leverage. He got better at pad level. And all of a sudden, he started to embrace that side of the game a little bit, to the point where, you know, he's not going to come out and say he loves it, because I don't think any running back loves it. But he felt comfortable doing it, and he took a little joy out of the moments when he stymies the opposing linebacker or whoever's blitzing off the edge. So, you know, one thing to keep an eye on in the exhibition games is how do Aaron Jones and Devontae Mays pass protect? Because if they don't look very good, or if they look extremely poor, or just, you know, really behind the eight ball, the chances of them earning reps with the starting offense are basically zilch, because you need to protect Aaron Rodgers. That's, you know, priority number one when you don't have the football in your hands. And if you can't do that, they're not going to risk putting you out on the field. And right now, Jamal Williams is the guy that they trust, other than Ty Montgomery, to be out there with the starters. The last thing I'll mention, again, you know, I've talked briefly about two of the disciplinary matters that the Packers have had to deal with in the last few months, and there were some new angles on those today. Ted Thompson spoke to the media for the first time since the draft, I believe, and in between the draft and now, of course, LaTroy Guyon was arrested for drunken driving in Hawaii, and this was the first opportunity that the media had to ask Ted Thompson why he continues to keep LaTroy Guyon on the roster despite two arrests, two suspensions, and basically a litany of embarrassing acts that just really put the franchise in a bad light. And so he was asked why hasn't he cut Guyon, and he said basically that LaTroy has made some mistakes, but the franchise has not gotten to the point yet where they feel the need to cut ties with him. I'm baffled by that. I don't see any reason to keep this guy around. He's certainly not good enough to warrant staying around through all of those transgressions and embarrassing moments. And so to me, I just don't get it. I think that it's a little bit of an embarrassing moment for the franchise the longer he stays with this team. And, you know, I just think eventually enough is enough. And when a guy has a repeated pattern of knucklehead behavior going back really for the last 7-8 years since he was in Minnesota, you know, at what point do you say, look, grow up or leave? And clearly he can't grow up. So if I were in charge, he would have to leave. And then the other element that goes into this disciplinary category that I'm talking about is Darren Perry. I mentioned him earlier talking about the safeties. Darren Perry was convicted of drunk driving this summer. He faces a couple different punishments, one being a pretty hefty fine of just under $1,000, and the other losing his driving privileges for 8 months. And so he was asked if he expects any sort of a suspension from the league or any discipline imposed by the league, you know, toward the start of the regular season now that his legal matter is wrapped up. And Perry said he doesn't know if there's going to be any punishment or suspension handed down, but everything that has been asked of him so far when it comes to questions by the league or actions needed to be taken as asked by the league, he says that he's complied with all of that. He's completed everything that he's needed to do. And so at this point, it's up to the league if they want to impose any further punishment and or suspension. And that'll be something that the Packers find out in the coming weeks, probably, as the regular season gets closer. So once again, I've overstayed my welcome on this daily podcast. I started out thinking this was going to be a 15-minute thing, and then it became a 20-minute thing. And then today, there was so much interesting information that I wanted to talk about from the coaches yesterday that I've jumped up almost toward a half hour. So thank you guys very much for sticking with me. I really appreciate all the nice feedback and comments you guys have given me about the podcast, different ideas, different ways to make it better, things you like, things you don't like, and it's been really enjoyable to interact with a lot of you guys. So thank you very much for listening, and as always, I'll talk to you tomorrow.